You're listening to Interviews with Adam. I'm your host, Adam Miller, and today we are joined by Ryan Loxmo, who's the author of a book called Paul and His Team, What the Early Church Can Teach Us About Leadership and Influence. As we look to the book of Acts and really the continuation of the Gospel of Luke, we see this really great story that's leading us towards the story of Paul, but interspersed all along the way are all of these other characters. I'm really excited to get into this book with the author, Ryan. Thank you so much for being a part of the Many Voices for That One Message.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Why don't you get us started by telling us a little bit about the kind of basis for this book? Because we know the Luke and Acts are kind of really one book that come together to tell, get us quickly to the story of Paul and the continuation of the church. But you're kind of writing about how Paul is, although a central figure to the book of Acts, he's also building this great team around him. What gave you this concept or this idea to kind of write this in this way?
Well, the idea started actually back in my doctoral work. So I was working on my PhD and focusing on early Christianity, the first century church. And I was actually writing my dissertation on the book of Philemon and trying to reconstruct kind of historically what was happening with Christians at that time. And I just became more familiar with these lesser known members of Paul's team. People like Epaphras and Tychicus and Erastus and Onesimus and people like that. And the more I got to know them, the more fascinated I was by them, and the more Paul's team started to kind of come into focus. And I started to see that, yes, Paul was a unique leader. He was set apart for a particular ministry, and certainly he was the leader. But I think he was less of a kind of heroic singular figure than sometimes we make him out to be, because when he spoke about these other members of his team, he spoke about them with these lofty terms, you know, co-worker, you know, fellow soldier, fellow prisoner. He viewed himself as being in the trenches with these people, and it can be hard to see all of them because they're mentioned kind of in passing in different places. You mentioned the book of Acts. Some of them are mentioned there. Many of them are mentioned at the beginnings or endings of his letters, which are parts that are really easy for us to skim over when we're reading his letters. And so what I wanted to do, I had this idea when I was still a student, wouldn't that be great one day to write a book that just kind of highlights the kind of the supporting cast of Paul and bring his team into view. And so the idea was just there for a few years. And then I got into ministry as a pastor and started to learn some really interesting and challenging leadership lessons. And this idea was still back there. And I started thinking about writing this book. And I thought, well, the book isn't just about these people. Like, let me just describe who these people are. It's really a leadership book. It's let's look back at the first century. And let's look at Paul and intentionally view him in the context of his broader team. Who were these other people? How did they all work together? What were their priorities? How did they approach the challenges that faced them as they shared Christ with the Roman world? And so that was kind of the light bulb moment of going from just an idea back in school to here's a book. Was instead of it just being a book about these people and Paul's team and describing them, it was really going to be kind of a book about leadership and Christian influence and looking at that team for case studies and examples of what that looks like.
It is interesting when you think about it. You know, I was thinking in the context of the book of Acts because you see so many of these other key figures, and a lot of them aren't even named, like the people in Antioch. It just says a few men or a group of men led by the Spirit went out and spread the gospel. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not even named. And yet you do see in all of these epistles, he names all of these individuals who are part of his team. This kind of creates a very unique aspect to where we kind of have this mindset in our culture today of a lot of maverick pastors that are kind of like single guys that build a ministry around themselves and kind of brand a recognition with their name. But you're kind of referencing something that's in there in the scriptures. It's a little bit different, isn't it?
I think you're right. I did not set out to write the book as a critique of current Christian leadership culture in America. That was not the goal. I didn't have that agenda. But I will say, having written it and having looked closely at the way Paul and his team work together, I do think the result of that work was a counterpoint to what's going on in pastoral ministry and leadership culture in this country, which is very, like you said, kind of personality driven. It's focused on the charisma of the leader, like you said, building brands. And I think if there was ever anyone in the history of the church who could have done that, and probably most people would have felt fine about it, was the Apostle Paul. And yet he was continually pushing himself to the side and saying, it's not about me, and I want to raise up these leaders and look at these people who are my coworkers. I couldn't have done it without them. They risked their lives for me. And even in some of these debates with other, or there were debates going on about his leadership versus like Apollos and other Christian leaders, people were kind of pledging allegiance to him or these other leaders. And Paul just didn't even want to have that discussion. Like he said in 1 Corinthians 3, I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God gave the growth. So the Corinthians are arguing over, you know, kind of who gets the most leadership credit at their church. And Paul basically says, that's a complete distraction. Look, I planted the church. Yeah, then Apollos came along. He did some work too, and he helped it grow. That's great. But at the end of the day, who made this thing grow? Mm. It wasn't me. It wasn't Apollos. It was God. And so he was intentionally pushing off that kind of culture and elevating the people on his team around him. And so I do think that's a challenge and a counterpoint to what's going on these days. But I also think inspiring for people thinking about what does it look like to lead, you know, in 2018 and beyond.
As you spent your time in the preparation work, I mean, you have a lot to pull from because Paul is one of the primary authors of the New Testament with all of the epistles mm-hmm. and all the letters he's written, the pastoral epistles mm-hmm. to Timothy. Obviously, this is a key component even as a character in the book of Acts. So mm-hmm. In all of your research, how did you congeal all of this in dealing with the person of the Apostle Paul? Because he's also been modern, the new perspectives on Paul has kind of become mm-hmm. a little bit of an issue of debate a lot in our culture too. So,
mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a great question. There's so much written about Paul. And I kind of, in the introduction to the book, I kind of just lay out explicitly that I'm going to sidestep a lot of that conversation. And there are so many great volumes written on Paul, his theology, his life, and that sort of thing. And I didn't want to write this book as a strictly academic book and really engage in a deep way in those discussions, because what I wanted to do is look at the life of Paul, but really just to the extent that I'm able to bring into focus how he seemed to work in the context of his team. So I actually was intentional about not really going into a whole lot of that because there just wasn't the scope for that kind of discussion in this book. But, you know, I do talk about in the early chapters kind of who he was, his background a little bit, certainly his, and most of what I talk about is pretty agreed on across the board in Pauline scholarship. So I think his dual background as a Jewish person growing up in a Greco-Roman city, being multilingual, highly educated, Roman citizen, all those kind of agreed upon biographical aspects of who he was. How did that play out in the way that he shared the gospel? How did God use those attributes of his background to open doors? And how did his team, how did they function with someone like him leading? So, for example, I talk about the fact that when he would go into cities, he would try to find common ground whenever he could. He and his team, this was a pattern. They would go into a synagogue if there was one there because they could start with some Jewish cultural and religious common ground. And if that didn't work, they would go somewhere else. They'd go to the marketplace. They would, just go wherever people were. And so they were fighting for that common ground to begin conversations about Christ on a positive footing. And I think his background, his biography really enabled him to have that approach. And so, definitely tried to weave together, as you said, the narrative we see in Acts with a lot of these kind of biographical references he scatters throughout his letters. And that was really a big part of writing the book in general, is you're taking all these little fragments of evidence from around his letters and putting it side by side with the book of Acts and bringing out this picture of not just Paul, but the other people in his circle.
Yeah, I like what you're talking about, the kind of idea of common ground. I think a lot of us, including myself, have looked at Paul for a long time as this really strong personality. I mean, he stands up to Peter on the issue of circumcision, yes. and he has some very bold statements that he makes, and even in his epistles. I think of, you know, calling his Jewish brothers dogs in Philippians 3. But he also, in Romans 14, 1 Corinthians 8, 9, and 10, and even in Philippians 1, he has a much softer tone in dealing with people who might think differently than him, encouraging them to work out their salvation on their own and to understand these things and wrestle with ideas as they seek to honor God. He's much more of a unique character than I think we can just paint him into a corner, as we can almost paint him into our own ideas of what we want him to be, right?
That's right. Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. He's a lot more complex than I think we have tended to think of him. I think we tend to think of him, again, as this kind of singular heroic figure and very kind of bombastic and blunt. And he could be that way. But yes, he also is very compassionate and he relied on people. And you see that side of him as well if you're looking for it. And yeah, I mean, I think of like in Romans 16, for example, when he's got all of these, he's listing all of these people in the final chapter in the greetings portion. It's a part that's easy to skip over and just kind of, okay, I got to the end of Romans. I don't need to read all these names. But there's some beautiful stuff in there. Like he says, greet Rufus and his mother, who's been a mother to me too. And it's those kinds of little passing comments that are so valuable, because that tells us a couple things: that Paul was open about his own need. And there, he made other comments like that along the way. You know, here's this woman, we don't know her name, who played a role in the early church in caring on some level for Paul. And here he is saying, greet Rufus and his mother, who's been a mother to me too. And I think that's the kind of thing that we easily gloss over. And you're right, there were those moments where Paul got angry and called people out. But in my study, I really found that there were only two places where he did that consistently, two subjects, and they were distortions of the gospel and church disunity. If people were distorting the gospel, he had no time for it. Galatians is the famous example of that. And if people were needlessly causing disunity in the churches, that really upset him. But when it came to personal relationships, when it came to people even attacking him personally and criticizing him, and all kinds of other things, I think he showed a remarkable amount of restraint and diplomacy and kindness and grace and all those qualities that we'd hope to see people in influence exercising.
You know, as we think about the complexity of the Apostle Paul and his team building skills, I'm pretty sure all of our thoughts and all of our listeners are going to thinking about Barnabas and Mark. Tell our listeners a little bit about the synopsis of this scenario and really how it kind of plays into this greater scope of the Apostle Paul who eventually calls for John Mark.
Yeah, that's right. That's kind of a classic example of conflict resolution. And there are several chapters in my book that ended up being about conflict resolution in one form or another. Personal divisions, which would, this example of Barnabas and Mark would be that. Then there are kind of cultural chasms that Paul and his team were trying to negotiate, where there's conflict between groups of people for some social reason, and all kinds of conflict. And so I didn't set it out to write a book about conflict resolution, but I don't think it's surprising that of 11 chapters, several would end up being about dealing with conflict, because that was a big part of their ministry and a big part of ministry today. Mm. Paul, Barnabas, and Mark. Barnabas was an early friend in ministry of Paul's, advocated for Paul when he first became a believer, when other Christian leaders didn't believe that Paul had actually become a Christian. And in these early missionary journeys of Paul's, Barnabas was right there with them. By all accounts, they were great friends. And they were in the trenches together in these formative ministry and spiritual experiences with Paul. They were together. And then Mark, Barnabas's cousin, it seems, from the descriptions we get in the New Testament, comes along for part of a journey and then leaves. And Paul and Barnabas continue on. And then later, when it comes time to go on another journey, Barnabas says, "Hey, let's leave. Let's take Mark again." Paul says, "Well, he abandoned us last time, so I don't think so." And they get into what Luke describes as a bitter disagreement over it. Paul and Barnabas, a very sharp disagreement. And they can't come to terms over it. And so they part ways. Paul, he can't go forward with Barnabas or Mark. That's how personal and difficult it was. It's one of those things you look at and it really humanizes Paul and it humanizes what these early Christian leaders were doing. They were people. They weren't these stained glass figures traveling around the Roman world. They were people that struggled in all kinds of ways. But one of the most hopeful things, and again, this is why it's so important to look for these connecting points. You know, this disagreement happens between Paul and Barnabas and Mark. And then about 10 years later, or so, roughly, a decade later, Paul is writing 2 Timothy, and he's toward the end of his life, and he says, "Only Luke is with me. Get Mark and bring him with you. He's helpful to me in my ministry." And you see that it's just a passing comment, but it shows that over the course of that decade, some reconciliation had happened, and they had begun working together again, he and Mark. So much so that in one of his final letters, Paul's able to say, you know, "Make sure Mark comes to see me. He's very helpful to me in my ministry." There was a time where Paul couldn't even imagine doing ministry with Mark. And here he is saying, "He's very helpful to me." So it shows that they didn't write each other off. They didn't burn the bridge. They didn't give up. And in some way, shape, or form, they worked for reconciliation in those years, which would have been hard. Travel and communication was painfully slow. They wouldn't have seen each other that often. So I think that's an inspiration and a challenge for us. When we experience disagreement, you don't write people off. You don't give up. You pray and ask the Lord to heal whatever there is. You never know what he might do.
You know, I think this is a really key point, especially in our culture today, where there is quite a bit of division amongst evangelical Christians on a lot of issues, and we can't seem to work together on things that are rather petty. When it comes to the greater need in the community of reaching souls for the kingdom of God, there are a lot of things that are getting in the way, aren't there?
I think so, yep. Our culture is certainly at a very divided moment right now, and the church is a part of that on some level. Division has always been there in the church, but definitely the cultural moment now of 2016, 2017, 2018 is definitely a moment where the church, I think, needs to be more mindful of being voices of unity and reconciliation. You know, that 2 Corinthians 5 picture that Paul paints, that God reconciled us to Christ, and in doing so, gave us the ministry of reconciliation, and we are then Christ's ambassadors to a watching world, and it's as if God's making his appeal through us. And I think that that's such an important lens for us as believers, and I'm not talking just pastors, I'm talking anybody who has faith in Christ, who is setting an example for anyone. That picture of being an ambassador for Jesus is such a foundational idea that we see in Paul's ministry and his team, but we have to embrace that as well, because when you're an ambassador, you don't make the message. You are sent on a mission to represent the one who has given you the message. And that's what we're called to be, is ambassadors. And you see that in Paul's team. You see them reaching across cultural ravines that no one else in the Roman world was doing. You know, I think of Paul and Philemon and Onesimus, a slave owner and his fugitive slave. And Paul is saying, you know what, even that gap is not too far for Christ to bridge. And I can't think of a further gap than that in that world. I mean, slaves were not even thought of as human, really. They were subhuman generally. But then you add the extra dimension that he was a fugitive slave. Fugitive slaves were killed. And Paul is saying, not only should you receive him back, Philemon, you should view him no longer as a slave, but as a brother. Yeah, he's family now because of Jesus. I mean, that, when you really let that sink in, there's no cultural divide right now in 2018. There's no theological divide that is bigger than that was in the Roman world. So if Paul called them to that kind of unity and reconciliation, that same charge is for us.
You know, this book, in a lot of ways, speaks to that grander calling that we all have to be a partner together, churches with other churches, ministries mm-hmm. with other ministries. But you're also talking about the very personal level of this, where within a church you have pastors and the utilization of members of the church as a part of his team. This is a key element mm-hmm. where a lot of churches, a lot of seminaries have thought that pastors need to kind of be able to do it all. That's not yeah. really the case we see in the book of Acts or the New Testament.
Not at all. Paul was perfectly willing to raise people up and set them loose to lead. And it was a unique circumstance in that he was planting new churches in areas that had never heard of Jesus before. So it's a little different than a lot of the context that we find ourselves in. But I think the principles are still there. You know, Thessalonica, for example, in the book of Acts, you see that he went there for a few weeks, and then because of some opposition, he had to leave. And then he's writing these letters back to them that we have, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, and he's kind of pastoring them from a distance, you know, remotely, and he's doing this with lots of churches, but he also had his network of people, Silas and Tychicus and Epaphras and Onesimus and Luke and Titus, all these folks in his circle, Priscilla, Aquila, who he could rely on to teach people about Christ, to shepherd these churches. He didn't really have much of a choice, honestly, because there were not that many Christian leaders around, but he was willing to do it, and he trusted that the Lord was going to do his work through them, and he certainly did. And so I think for us, today, those of us who have some kind of ministry leadership role, when we feel that anxiety or that worry, you know, can I hand this ministry over to this person? Can I really trust them? Yes, we can look back to Paul and see that he entrusted very important aspects of the ministry to people who were still learning what leadership was even about, but he was going to continue to invest in them via letter. He was going to visit occasionally, and he was going to pray for them. And so I do think that that is a challenge for people who maybe struggle to let go, or maybe struggle to feel like they have to do everything themselves. Paul didn't do that.
You know, I'm in ministry and pastorate for myself. I've always had to see it as something I was working myself out of a job. And I think that that's a kind of a key element yeah. where you're thinking about building your team. You know, Paul talks about raising up leaders in the church, like building mm-hmm. up people to kind of hand down the mantle, 2 Timothy 2, teaching yeah. leaders, teaching to teach other leaders, this mindset of kind of building. This is really an encouragement to, in a lot of ways, to pastors to kind of think about how they build their team. But it's also, you're not just writing to pastors, you're writing to a whole church, a whole congregation of people who can see
yeah.
that they are a part of the team, that they are a yep. part of the ministers of the church, that the pastor's equipping mm-hmm. ministers to do the work of the ministry in Ephesians 4, right?
That's exactly right. And you just hit the nail on the head with the Ephesians 4. That's the role of the leader, the pastor, is to equip the saints for ministry. It's to equip. It's not to do everything for them. In fact, you can actually find yourself in a position of stunting spiritual growth, I think, if you try to maintain control over every aspect of someone's spiritual life, instead of pointing them in the right direction, pointing them to Christ, giving them resources, going alongside of them, but helping them see that ultimately their growth and the journey that they're on is going to be something that that they're going to be leaning on the Lord for, and they're going to be going forward, and they don't have to be dependent in every aspect of their faith life on their pastor. And that's a hard thing, because the easier thing, I think, it's not easy, but the easier thing is to just program everything. So if you think about it in a church context, like, we're going to have a program for everything we want our people to be doing. And if everyone participates in every single program, then voila, we have a mature Christian. But that's, I think, out of the spirit of what we see happening in the first century and you know, what Paul was teaching, which is the leadership of the church is not supposed to just spoon feed everything to believers forever. At some point, followers of Christ need to become self-feeders and feeders of others. And it's going to look different for every person, because every person has a different sphere of influence. God has put different people in all of our lives. And so the leadership of the church should be there to equip, to disciple, encourage, support, come alongside, and provide all kinds of suggestions and opportunities for people to explore. But to not get confused with, okay, spiritual maturity equals, you know, full participation in every single thing my church offers. I think that actually can paint a skewed picture of what spiritual growth looks like for people who attend.
Now, in looking over the life of Paul and really how Paul built his team, and having served in the past yourself and now writing this book, I have to ask a question of how you started to see your own self in the life of Paul, or Paul, how he spoke to you specifically, and what he taught you about your own ministry and your own impact with the gospel.
Yeah. I learned a lot from writing this book and doing this research. It kind of took me in directions I wasn't necessarily planning on, and I'm a planner. So when I write, I usually outline everything. Here's where I'm headed. I'm going to write this. And as I went through, I just found, as I studied, there were insights and areas of his personality and ministry that I just never considered. And it was very, encouraging and challenging for me to see those things. So one thing I'll point out. So when I started writing this book, it was right at the time that we were launching our church, because we planted our church in the fall of 2016. And so there was a lot happening in my life at that time. Very exciting to start a new church, all kinds of pressure, emotional burden and all sorts of things. And so it was just kind of this roller coaster of emotions and struggles, joy, all kinds of things. And when I wrote this book, and I really keyed into what Paul was saying about the people around him who supported him in his ministry, that really resonated with me in a way that it never had before, because now I found myself in a position of absolutely having to rely on people around me, the launch team of our church, for this thing to even work. I was so palpably confronted with my inability to do this on my own that when I read and saw Paul just kind of gushing over the people in his ministry and how much he loves them and cares for them and needs them, that really jumped out to me. And especially 2 Corinthians 11, when he lists, you know, all of he boasts about his sufferings. I've been through all of this. I've been beaten. I've been shipwrecked. I've been in danger from robbers, and I've been stoned and all this stuff. And then that little comment he makes at the end, besides all of that, the daily pressure of my concern for all the churches. And that comment really stood out to me, because to me, it sounds like he's saying almost worse than all of those physical beatings and everything that I've gone through, almost worse than all that is my daily personal emotional struggle of caring for these people. And that really humanized Paul to me in a way that I'd never experienced. And I'm certainly not in any way going to compare myself to Paul, but some of that emotional terrain, I think I explored for the first time in planting a church and then writing this book at the same time. Just that need for the people around me, reliance on them, transparency about my own limitations, and my love for the people in our church. So I just saw resonance with that in Paul's letters.
One of the kind of key verses that pops to my mind when talking about the Apostle Paul and how he built his team and really what is at his heart is Romans 14:19. It says, let us therefore make every effort to do what leads to peace and to mutual edification. I see that at the very core of this book that you've written on Paul and his team. Really, what is your hope for our listeners and your readers to walk away from reading this book and to think about where their role is in the team that God has placed them?
Yeah, I think my hope for the readers is just that they would find inspiration in the way these first century Christians went about living out their faith and sharing the gospel with others, and that they would see that, you know, there's a variety of types of influence at work. I think a lot of people today kind of have the mindset, well, if I'm not a pastor, if I'm not an author, if I don't have a big blog, if I don't have some kind of visible leadership role, then I'm not really one of the main leaders that God's going to use. I'm kind of a background figure. I think a lot of people feel that way. I know a lot of people feel that way. And I think regardless of who you are, you have influence over someone. There is someone looking to you as an example, and God wants to use who you are, your personality, your gifts, the way he made you, because he made you unique. He wants to use all that for his kingdom purposes. And I think that for anyone to just take a moment and look closely at how the first century church operated, how Paul's team operated, I think you find inspiration because you see the variety of influence and people who are involved, people who are in behind the scenes capacities, people in the business sector, like Erastus, Priscilla and Aquila, who were in Paul's corner, people in the government sector, like Erastus, men and women who were in all walks of life that were incredibly integral to what Paul was doing. So I think looking closely at him and his team can provide that, kind of corrective lens for the way that we sometimes view ourselves in ways that I don't think God views us, and I don't think are reflective of what he might want to do through us.
We've been talking with Ryan Loxmo. He's the author of Paul and His Team, What the Early Church Can Teach Us About Leadership and Influence, a great book for pastors and laymen to understand how they fit into the team we're all pulling together for the sake of the kingdom of God and the gospel of Jesus Christ. So, Ryan, thank you so much for being a part of the Many Voices for that one message.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
We hope you enjoyed this interview made possible by our ministry at Songtime Radio. You can find out more information about our ministry by visiting our website at songtime.com, where you can find this and other interviews on our podcast series, as well as our weekday broadcast, which includes teaching, interviews, and music. We also want to encourage you to sign up for our free monthly newsletter. It's got encouraging articles, and there is no obligation. To find out more information about our ministry, again, visit our website at songtime.com. This ministry is made possible by people just like yourself. We are 100% supported by our listeners. So if you have been blessed today, why not join with the many voices together for that one message, the gospel of Jesus Christ, with your donation to the Songtime Ministry. To make a donation, you can do so online at our website at songtime.com, as well as by mail. Write to us at Songtime Radio, P.O. Box 100, Barnstable, Massachusetts, 02630, or give us a call. Make a donation over the phone. It's 508-362-7070. On behalf of our entire Songtime staff and our own Dr. John DeBrine, the founder here at Songtime, who encourages you to grow in grace and not groan in disgrace, from Cape Cod, I'm Adam Miller. God bless.